And we bring in Michael Warschauer, our Hollywood insider. Michael, as always, a pleasure, my friend. How are you?
Doing well. As always, a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's get into the festivities last night. Sunday, they had the Hollywood Film Awards. What were some of your major takeaways from the Hollywood Film Awards?
Well, this is the first award show of the season. It kind of kicks off the real awards race that will finish up at the Oscars in February. It's not a great predictor of winners, but it's certainly the first chance for some front runners to start getting momentum for nominations. So it is kind of an important first step for especially some of the big buzzy performances and movies. And kind of true to form, a couple of big winners that at the Hollywood Film Awards last night are major Oscar contenders and have had a lot of buzz. Antonio Banderas picked up Best Actor for Pain and Glory, while Renee Zellweger picked up Best Actress for Judy. Both of them have been major contenders already. I think both of them are kind of shoo-ins, at least to be nominees, so this kind of backs that up even more. The same goes for Al Pacino and Laura Dern in the supporting categories for The Irishman and Marriage Story, respectively. Both, of course, are very, very well-respected and very big actors, so I suspect that they will end up with nominations as well. Again, just an early predictor, just kind of testing the waters on this. But two interesting storylines to keep an eye on. Winning the Breakout Actress Award was Cynthia Erivo for Harriet. She's been talked about to get her first Oscar nomination for that this year. And also winning the Hollywood Filmmaker Award was Bong Joon-ho for his movie Parasite, which is kind of in the discussion that Roma was in last year, whether or not a foreign language film can crack the Best Picture nomination. So both of those are two interesting wins to keep an eye on. But other than that, just sort of kicking off the award season as expected.
We're going to talk more about The Irishman in the coming weeks here because I'm awfully interested to see how they attack that. Seems like it's going to be very, very interesting, though. Michael, any idea why the new Terminator movie did so poorly at the box office? I realize it finished at the top of the list, but seemed like it fell way short of expectations.
Oh, yeah, big time. I mean, you would think $25 million for a lot of franchises and movies wouldn't be too bad, but this is a big bomb. The studio right now is looking at about $120 to $140 million loss on the picture, which is huge. It not only tanked here, but it tanked in China as well, which is usually such a big, important market for films that don't do well domestically to try and make up that money. So it was really bad. And it's strange because this is actually the best-reviewed Terminator movie since Terminator 2. It not only by critics, by audiences as well. They brought back James Cameron to produce it. They brought back Linda Hamilton and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Everything about it just seemed to be clicking and like it was going to work, but it just completely bombed. And there's a lot of factors going into this. I think, first of all, you've had this is the sixth movie in the franchise now, and while it's supposed to pick up story-wise after Terminator 2, it's kind of hard to forget those three that have been in the intervening years, Terminator 3, Terminator Salvation, and Terminator Genesis, all of which had really poor reviews. And while a couple of them performed okay at the box office, all of them really kind of suffered from constantly changing mythology, kind of changing the backstories and everything from the original franchise. So I think there was a lot of distrust in maybe fans of the franchise of going to see it. I think there's also really, it's been a long time since Terminator 2, and while it's certainly a classic and it certainly has its major devotees, I think such a long time and so many bad movies in between really contributed to a poor showing at the box office. And this likely means the end of the Terminator franchise, at least for a while, and certainly I think as a film franchise. It's going to be really, really hard to convince another studio to take a gamble on it. Although I did see one thing that said, don't count out a streaming service who in 5-6 years wants to reboot it and just take that intellectual property and run with it. But for right now, I would say it's pretty safe to say that we won't be seeing any new Terminator movies anytime soon.
So you mentioned that this was pretty well reviewed, which I find pretty interesting for a movie that obviously wasn't very well attended in its opening weekend. Could this be the kind of film that, because of some of the positive reviews that it got, might be able to blossom a bit in its second weekend at the box office?
It might, and it certainly helped that not only was, you know, its Rotten Tomatoes score pretty high, but its cinema score and its audience scores were very high. So the people that did go enjoyed it. I could see this being a movie that does certainly kind of hold steady. I don't see it necessarily like being a surprise surge next week. Maybe it comes in close to where it was this week or even a little bit lower. So that's very possible. But I suspect this is a movie that is going to make as much money as it can on the end of its run. So it's selling it to a streaming service or to an HBO or something like that, and really relying on those sales because, I think it tanking in both the U.S. and abroad, that's really bad just overall. I think that drives away a lot of audiences just knowing that, even when they're hearing good word of mouth. So it certainly has a very steep hill to climb, but it is possible that they kind of continue to be consistent for another couple weeks here.
Michael, do you think this is a statement to the Terminator movies, or do you think this is a statement about movies in general? Are people just not as willing to go out there and see them? I mean, as you mentioned, it got good reviews. It just seems people would rather stay home and watch Netflix or the new Apple TV or whatever else is on there.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a combination of both. I think that and you have enough people that maybe lost interest in the franchise after three really bad sequels before this that just, you know, kind of couldn't get over the ad campaign for it or whatever it was. They're just fatigued by it. But, you know, as we've talked about before, I think there is a lot of franchise fatigue that's starting to settle in, and we're seeing the limits of you know, what these franchises can be. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Men in Black International, which came out this summer, another franchise kind of rebooting or jump-starting after a long break. And audiences didn't care. Like, even though they were able to bring in a great cast and, you know, have a lot of buzz and press around it, nobody really went to go see it. It was kind of an afterthought. And I kind of get the sense that that's what's happening here. Is it's just been too long since we've had a good Terminator movie that you can't just count on having a franchise alone unless that franchise is something like Star Wars, which you know, has millions and millions of fans who are participating in this community all the time. And Terminator just doesn't have that, or Men in Black doesn't have that. So I think there's a lot of facets to this, but of course the flip side is you have a movie like Halloween, which came out last year, which is the same sort of thing, skipped the story of all both sequels and went back to the original movies, and that did very well. So I don't know. This may just be kind of a freak case, but I think it's another case of franchise fatigue settling in.
Michael Warshauer, our Hollywood guru, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Well, Michael, we need to get into these streaming wars. There's been some talk that the Disney Plus streaming service could end up losing some titles in the long run to Netflix. My questions are, what could they possibly lose, and how big of a hit would those losses be?
Well, yes, they are going to lose some titles back to Netflix. Basically, before Disney Plus became something set in motion, they signed a pretty big deal with Netflix. That's how we've ended up with you know, some new Marvel movies, the Star Wars sequels, the Pixar movies on Netflix. And so those contracts expire at the end of the year, and basically their licensing agreement was that Netflix would get that content for a year and a half. So anything that's on there right now will play out the end of its licensing deal before moving over to Disney Plus. So things like the last Star Wars movie, The Last Jedi, will move over. You'll start to see several Marvel movies. But because of a quirk in their contract, all of the movies that Disney released from January 2016 to 2018 that came out on Netflix will go back to the streaming service in 2016. So you'll be seeing a lot of those, you know, Marvel Phase 3 movies like Black Panther, Doctor Strange, Avengers. Those will start to return in about 6 years. and this is not really unique. NBC has a similar deal as well, as does Warner Media with Netflix. So you'll see possibly shows like The Office and Friends, which are moving off of Netflix, return to it in about 6 years. it is possible that, you know, these are massive corporations with lots and lots of money. It is possible that they figure out some sort of a deal just to keep things where they are. But this is sort of one of the interesting transitions in these streaming wars, is how all of these contracts and ownership of these things is going to shake out. So I don't think it's going to be a huge hit to Disney Plus in the long run. I think in 6 years, the landscape is going to be really different, so it'll be hard to predict. And, of course, they're pumping out tons and tons of content all the time. But certainly an interesting wrinkle in sort of this consolidation of media properties.
I'm fascinated by some of the originals that they're trying to come out with that they've been promoting since they really kind of teased the release of this Disney Plus streaming service, but that's a different conversation for a different day. All right, well, Watchmen is something I know we talked about a couple of weeks ago. What kinds of things have you seen, and what kinds of things are you hearing about this series of Watchmen?
This is a pretty great show. It's one that I was very excited for. I was never really a big fan of the comic. I was a fan of the comic, but not to certainly the degree of some people. I wasn't a huge fan, though, of Zack Snyder's film adaptation. It's very good. It comes from Damon Lindelof, who, of course, did Lost before moving into doing the Star Trek franchise and The Leftovers on HBO. And it's set in the future of the original Watchmen book, so an alternate timeline for the United States, where Robert Redford is the president of the country. Police now wear masks to protect their identity, and the famous Dr. Manhattan from the original Watchmen is on Mars and completely ignoring Earth. And it's a really kind of wild show. I loved the premiere. This past week's third episode was phenomenal. It really has a great cast led by Regina King and Jean Smart. Tim Blake Nelson's there as well, as is Jeffrey Irons. I think that it's a very fascinating tentpole for HBO. It kind of has some shades of Westworld, which is also a big hit for them, while retaining a little bit of that sci-fi weirdness that Damon Lindelof has been known for. So it's certainly one of the better reviewed shows of the fall season so far. And if you have HBO, it's certainly one not to miss. Very, very big budget, big action. Really, really very exciting.
So does it stay on track sort of with what the movie did, or does it follow more of the comic book? Can you say that without spoiling anything?
It really sort of connects fairly loosely to the original story. It sort of is its own thing that's set about 20 years after the events of the book. So there are a lot of sort of references. For instance, the villains, I guess, so far are inspired by Rorschach, the main character of the original book, but they're more of like a terrorist organization who kind of took his message the wrong way. So there's some really interesting parallels, and it sounds like they're going to continue to be more and more as the show sort of unfolds and gives us more things. But it's very intriguing. I'm really not sure where it's headed at this moment, but in a very good and exciting way.
Yeah. Well, we did have one other streaming question. We're going to table that for next week because I want to let this Apple TV Plus thing play out just a little bit more. I know that there are some publications that don't think it's out to a great start, but let's give that another week and let people explore and see what they think for themselves. Michael, we need this week's picks to click. What should we be watching this week now that we are going to be in the dark when most of us get home?
Well, a couple of good things to watch. First of all, starting tonight on HBO is their new big fantasy adaptation, His Dark Materials. It was already a huge hit in the UK, where it premiered, I think, last night to 7.2 million viewers, which is a huge audience over there. It's an adaptation of Philip Pullman's book that stars Daphne Keene, who starred in Logan from a few years ago, as well as James McAvoy, Ruth Wilson, and Lin-Manuel Miranda. It's about an orphan who embarks on a search to find her missing friend and uncovers a sinister plot involving stolen children. If you're a fantasy fan or just looking for another big tentpole show to watch, this should be for you. And if you want to go out to the movies this weekend, check out Dr. Sleep. It is the sequel to The Shining, based off of a 2013 book by Stephen King. It stars Ewan McGregor as Danny from The Shining, who his sort of confronting his past while dealing with a patient. And he's now a doctor. But I think it's going to be pretty good. It's got good reviews from critics and audiences. And director Mike Flanagan has been quietly one of the great horror directors over the last few years. So certainly one to go check out this weekend.
Great stuff. Michael, we appreciate the time as always. Have a great week, and we'll do this again next Monday.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.